All right. Good morning, members. Let's get Senate Finance and Claims started this morning. Prudence, would you please take the roll?
Vice Chair Cuff?
Here.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Here.
Senator Ankeny?
Excused.
Senator Bogner?
Excused.
Senator Boldman?
Excused.
I'm here. Sorry.
Thank you.
I'm here.
Senator Flowers?
Excused.
Senator Glimm?
Excused.
Senator Howard?
Here.
Senator Jacobson?
Here.
Senator Kerry?
Here.
Senator Keenan?
Here.
Senator Lang?
Here.
Senator Lynch?
Here.
Senator McNally?
Excused.
Senator Morjo?
Here.
Senator Salomon?
Your chair.
Friends with tax benefits.
Here.
Senator Smith?
Yeah. Excused.
Senator Wellborn?
Excused.
Chair Osmondson?
Here.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Senator McNally is here today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. You're right. Heather, I think we have, Senator Bogner in the queue? We could go ahead and admit him.
Yes.
There we go.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bogner is with us as well. Okay. All right, members, we're going to Representative Beattie needs to get back to approach, so we're going to start with House Bill 49, and then we're going to move to House Bill 36, and then we'll go on to 252, and then Senate Bill 383. So with that, let's open the hearing on House Bill 49. Representative Beattie.
Chairman Osmondson and members of this committee, for the record, my name is David Beattie, representative for House District 86, which is comprised of Hamilton and the immediately surrounding area. House Bill 49 seeks to increase by $1 the recording fee charged by county clerks. The purpose of this fee increase is to adequately fund the Montana Land Information Program. This recommendation that I'm bringing to you today is based upon an interim study of how to best fund digital services provided by the State Library. And this study was completed this past interim by members of the Legislative Finance Committee and the Education Interim Committee. The Montana Land Information Act was enacted in 2005. The Act's purpose is to create and maintain a standardized and sustainable system of collecting, managing, and disseminating geographic information within the Montana spatial data infrastructure. The State Library is charged with running this program. The original legislative intent for funding the Montana Land Information Act activities was to do this through recording fees charged by county clerks. The reason this funding source was selected is that recording of documents has a direct correlation to the cost of maintaining and expanding the digital cadastral database, which is a major component of the Montana Land Information Program. And I would note that this initial funding source has not been changed or increased since 2005. And as I mentioned, since 2005, the total recording fee per page for a document is $7, and it was established then, of which 75 cents of that goes to the State Library for funding its Montana Land Information activities, and 25 cents is retained by the county for its county land information activities. Per House Bill 49, the recording fee would be increased by $1, with 75 cents of the increase going to the State Library and 25 cents retained by the county. As is indicated in this fiscal note, this would increase funding to the library's Montana Information Act activities by approximately $830,000 a year, but have no impact on the general fund. Thank you, Chairman Osmondson. This concludes my opening statement.
Thank you, Representative Beattie. Are there proponents for House Bill 49?
Good morning, Chair Osmondson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Stapp, S-T-A-P-P, and I'm your state librarian. The state library was very challenged by budget cuts in 2017, and so our staff worked very hard during the interim with the Education Subcommittee of the Legislative Finance Committee to find solutions to fund the Montana Land Information Act work that do not rely on general fund and that more closely aligned with funding for the activities that drive the work, as Chair Beattie has described. Not only do private citizens pay these fees, any industry that is engaged in a land transaction also contributes to this source of revenue, including timber, oil and gas, utilities, mining, real estate development, and more. And I'm happy to have support from some of those industries here today. I'm grateful to the Legislative Finance Committee for recommending this legislation with their unanimous support, and I want to thank Chair Beattie for sponsoring House Bill 49. I also want to draw your attention to the increased funds for local governments that House Bill 49 supports. This legislation maintains the proportional split in the MLIA fee that was created in 2005, which to date has provided Montana counties more than $1.3 million to support their local GIS programs. Inherently, all spatial data is local, and it's for this reason that we work so closely with local governments to support GIS data development at the local level so that we can integrate their data into the data sets that the state maintains. Because of past investment, the state library staff were able to rapidly launch the state's COVID-19 dashboard and recently updated it to include vaccination information. This dashboard has raised the bar for how Montanans will come to expect information from our government. 8 years ago, 20,000 users per month used our GIS services, and usage was increasing steadily month over month. A year ago, that number was 470,000 users per month. With the launch of the dashboard, that number skyrocketed to more than 2.4 million visitors a month. And in total, the state library served nearly 30 million visitors in 2020. Like any infrastructure, and especially one that sees that kind of rapid increase in use, an information infrastructure requires continual maintenance and updating of the data itself to supporting the underlying technology platforms, to developing new applications to serve and access data collections. House Bill 49 ensures that Montanans continue to make this investment. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents, and I will remind folks, this has had a hearing in local government, so we are here on the fiscal note. So if we could keep our comments germane to the fiscal note, that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Peggy Trenk, spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I'm here today representing the Treasure State Resources Association in support of House Bill 49. I'd also like to express the support of the Montana Building Industry Association on behalf of Ms. Abby St. Lawrence and also the Montana Wood Products Association on behalf of Julia Ultimus. Both of those had conflicts this morning. But we're a coalition of many of the resource industries, agriculture, and other businesses, and our membership includes many of the users you've already heard mentioned who value the data that's provided through this program. These are folks who do pay the fee and are happy to do so because the information that they access is incredibly valuable to the business that they do, and in particular in land manage activities. The increase in the funding mechanism that is proposed makes sense. It's demonstrated it works. You don't have to stand up any other new program or management system, and it allows a broad section of folks to help maintain the program. So we urge a due pass on House Bill 49. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing none in the room, I believe we have one online. Is that correct, Heather?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Aiden Myrie, and I'm representing Weyerhaeuser today. Weyerhaeuser manages three mills in Montana, including lumber and plywood facilities. And a key component of the wood products produced in these mills is our Sustainable Forestry Initiative certification. And that provides buyers the assurance that our products are sourced from timberlands that meet high standards for species preservation and forest operations. We strongly support House Bill 49 because it provides the services that are critical to the success of our fiber sourcing program, and it strengthens the funding for the program that allows us to continue our excellent work and meet the core mission of the Montana Heritage Natural Heritage Program. So we encourage you to please support House Bill 49. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other proponents, do we have any opponents in the room? Seeing no opponents in the room and none online, do we have any informational witnesses in the room? Okay. I believe we have one online. Mr. Hammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Evan Hammer. It's spelled H-A-M-M-E-R, and I'm the Digital Library Administrator at the Montana State Library, available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other informational witnesses, do we have questions from the committee? Senator Lang.
Mr. Chairman, an explanation. I know you said we're just on a fiscal note, but just looking at the policy, looks to me like we got amended to $2. The fiscal note talks about a dollar. Is that correct?
You have a question for the sponsor?
Mr. Beattie? Representative Beattie, yes.
Hi, Chairman Robinson, Senator Lang.
Representative Beattie, and the fiscal note is talking about a dollar charge distributed $25.75. Yet the bill talks about it looks to me like maybe a $2 charge. Is that so? This numbers will be double here. Is that correct?
Chair Osmondson, Senator Lang, currently there is a dollar charge. That's what's in current law. So what's proposed here and what is represented in the fiscal note is the $1 increase to the recording fee.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Beattie, Mr. Chairman, we're basically doubling this, and the last time there was an increase or when this number was set, Mr. Beattie, was when?
Chairman Osmondson, Senator Cuff, that the current fee was set in 2005.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Representative Beattie, so how did we reach the number? Essentially, we doubled the price, looks to me like, on the charges that are coming. How did we arrive at that doubling of the price?
Chair Osmondson, Senator Cuff, we did an evaluation of overall funding for the library and came to that number. I will not try to tell you that I had there was a mathematical computation here, but we took a look at the increase in demand and came to the conclusion that a modest increase of a dollar should keep this program in a condition so that it can fulfill the requirements of the law.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
So that kind of leads to my thinking. Do we know that this is enough, or is it too much? How long before we need to take a look at it again?
Senator, Chairman Osmondson, Senator Cuff, we've worked closely with the state librarian and came to the conclusion that this should sustain us for several years. We've also relooked the entire funding structure for the library. So it's a complicated operation in the library. Much of their operation is a digital operation now, with many duties and missions that go beyond just running the kind of library that I think of and that, by the way, I enjoy. And so this provides a stable funding source for this particular program, and we've provided other funding mechanisms that I think will cause the library not have to draw upon other resources in order to fulfill the mission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one more question.
Go ahead.
Who is we? You say we studied it and we met with
Chair Osmondson, Senator Cuff, during the past interim, we had a joint effort of the Legislative Finance Committee and the Education Interim Committee. This was one of the study topics for that subcommittee, which I chaired. And we would include legislative staff and also active collaboration with the state librarian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor like to close.
Thank you, Chairman Osmondson, for a good hearing. Just want to reiterate the points that were made by some of the proponents here. since 2005, when the Montana Land Information Act was enacted, demand for the services it provides within this act have exploded, but our funding source has remained stagnant. Desirable aspects of this particular bill is that it doesn't create a different funding source. We rely on the same funding source that originally was put in place by the legislature to provide funding for this activity. And I might add that this fee that's provided here, I think, can be correctly characterized as a user fee. A user fee being something that a fee that is paid for services that are rendered, and hence I think is a fiscally responsible way for us to support and sustain this important activity of the state library, which is an important activity for all of Montanans. Thank you, Chairman Osmundson, and with your permission, I will depart for Appropriations Committee.
Thank you, Representative Beattie. This closes the hearing on House Bill 49. Members, we're going to go ahead and open the hearing on House Bill 36. And again, this has had a hearing in Senate Judiciary, so we're going to be on the fiscal note. So with that, Representative Stuart Pargway.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Sharon Stuart Pargway, House District 42. HB 36 is a result of State-Tribal Relations Interim Committee. Also, it was direct result is a constituent request. When we last session we passed what was termed HANA's Act, which established a task force. And so the task force held hearings, just to quickly give you a quick overview and how we come to this. And so the task force themselves then through the held hearings all across Montana and from the communities. And they identified some areas that there was areas that there were, they identified gaps in areas. And this is one of them. We have a series of bills that have been going through both the House and the Senate. And the response team is the result of some of the things, like for Bighorn County, for example. It's a county that really doesn't have the enough resources, particularly out in eastern Montana. Some of the counties, they're, you know, Bighorn County is equivalent to the size of Connecticut, if you really take a look at it. And so, and very few resources. And so the intent here, if you'll take a look at the fiscal note, is to, for efficiency purposes, to have trainings for volunteers and other entities. We're looking at it as multi-jurisdictional, Bighorn County, any BIA, DES, both at the county level and tribal level. Anyone that wants to participate in the training, and the idea is to have a training of trainers so that we can basically invest in the communities so that we have, similar to your volunteer firemen, where you have these people that then, if there is anyone that is a search and rescue or search and recovery, that these individuals would then be trained so that they could train other community members to be able to then move in and look for the missing individual, if it becomes a recovery, then they would be involved in that as well. And the reason why we bring this forward, if you'll take a look at the fiscal note, it talks about the national best practices, incident command considerations. With the past, the last search and recovery was with the Not Afraid case 2 years ago. And the family, along with tribal DES, set up a command center. And there was a gap in which the response. Bighorn County came alongside, but resources were stretched thin. On the state side, for any kind of search and rescue, just for an example, it's about $6,000. And this particular search went on for a month. And resources, the communities came alongside, Montana Highway Patrol came alongside. We had folks from North Dakota volunteering. And as it went further into the month, then people realized that it's probably going to be a recovery. And so some folks volunteered their cadaver dogs, and they came in and then went to try to cover the areas where they thought she might be. And then another set of cadaver dogs was brought in from North Dakota. And so you know as well as I do that it's $6,000, but when it begins to stretch out over a long-term period, it gets rather expensive. And so what we're hoping to do, because of understanding that resources are somewhat limited, to train the human resources, because it was phenomenal, the number of people that wanted to help. And if they weren't able to be there in person, they sent resources like water and food and all kinds. And I was there at the command center with the family. And so to see the outpouring of the help that was there. Other incidences in the Hannah case, Hannah Harris and Ashley in Blackfeet Country, it was left up to the family. And so these are the reasons why we're bringing this forward, that if we can invest in the community so that they know the right procedure, training of trainings, then we're able to be able to get out there quicker so that it's a rescue and not a recovery. And so that's the general reason why we're having these responsive trainings. And it is a problem when you look at Fort Peck, you look at the counties, and you look at Fort Belknap and the counties, Blaine County, particularly in eastern Montana, they're far and few in between. And so you're trying to bring people, you will need a number of teams to go out there. And so one of the questions that I was asked in the House was, and also in the Senate, does the tribe bring skin to the game? Yes, they do. And like I said, there's tribal DES, there's also Fish and Game, the BIA police, and so they all brought their resources. But then on the state side, they brought their resources. And so it was a collaborative effort and coordinated. And unfortunately, they found her body, and we had to bury her. So it's about response is important, trained response is important, and then having the last thing, the reason why we brought this forward is that sometimes if people are not trained, then you can trample the evidence. And so at this point, Ms. Not Afraid is a cold case. And so we are, it's still open, but because of the evidence that was trampled upon, it's harder. So that's why, for all those reasons, we ask that you fund it. And if you'll take a look at it's not a lot of money. It's we're looking at $61,000. I think if you look at some in the state special revenue as well. So between the two, we're looking at about at 61. That's what we started off with. We wanted to come in conservative, understand that resources are hard, but that the human resource outweighs the monetary resource, and then the will of the people outweighs that as well. So I would just ask for acceptance of the dollar amount, Mr. Chairman and Senators.
Thank you, Representative. Are there proponents to the fiscal note?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Keaton Sunchild, S-U-N-C-H-I-L-D, political director for Western Native Voice. We'll be quick, but we just think that it's very hard to put a price tag on investing in these communities so that they are well-equipped and well-prepared to, like Representative Stuart Paraguay said, to bring these missing folks home alive rather than just trying to recover a dead body. So we're asking that you do, take that into consideration and, remember that it's pretty hard to put a price tag on a human life. So thank you and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dahlia Killsback, K-I-L-L-S-B-A-C-K, and I'm the Deputy Political Director for Western Native Voice. Again, our organization is in strong support of this bill. Providing training is vital in protecting our family and friends in our tribal communities and will make a difference for tribal nations. We know one person missing is too many, and each person leaves behind loved ones and impacts an entire community. One of my cousins went missing 5 years ago. My entire family was anxious and scared, waiting to hear any news. Thankfully, he was found safe. But oftentimes, this is not the case, and Indigenous families are left to pick up the slack and conduct their own searches and ask for volunteers. One instance is the case of Kay Sarah Stops Pretty Places. Her family waited almost 2 weeks to be notified after her body was found by law enforcement. Again, we need to address these disjunctures and these issues, so we urge the committee to vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, Sam Forstag, F-O-R-S-T-A-G, ACLU of Montana. House Bill 36, the expenditure at question here is really a minimal request to address an ongoing crisis in our state, and we urge a due pass. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. For the proponents. Okay, seeing none in the room, I think we have a few online. Bundy.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Ellie Bundy, B-U-N-D-Y. I serve as a council member for the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes and am an active member of our local CSKT MMIP work group. I also serve as the presiding officer for Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force. I'm here today to express my support for House Bill 36 and to ask that this committee please strongly consider the $61,000 fiscal note attached to this bill. Coming from CSKT, where we are the first pilot project team in the nation to begin working on a tribal community response plan targeting MMIP cases, I can attest to the fact that training will be needed for those who commit to creating and implementing similar plans. The collaborative efforts between departments, which for us includes law enforcement, victim services, media, tribal council, grassroots organizations, local MMIP task force members, and family members of those missing is an amazing thing. And part of the beauty of it is that gaps will be identified. Being able to address those gaps is only one piece of the puzzle. The next more difficult piece is making sure that key players are properly trained to do the work needed specific to MMIP. This bill would provide funding for multidisciplinary teams to attend training that will improve the response, search and canvassing activities, investigation, and services associated with missing persons. Please give House Bill 36 your greatest consideration and help our tribal nations get access to this important training, which may otherwise be impossible. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sydney Barry. For the record, that's B-A-R-R-Y, and I'm with the Montana Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. We support HB 36 and the funding required to implement it. This issue needs to be a priority for Montana and is deserving of the state's support and investment. And it really is a minimal cost in order to address the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Hello, Chairman and committee members. My name is Ikutsumi Sikimaki Beck. For the record, that last name is spelled B-C-K. And I'm just here to speak on behalf of the Indigenous Organizers Collective of Montana in support of this fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. Thank you. My name is Jan Strout, and I am president and speaking on behalf of the Montana chapter of the National Organization for Women. We rise strongly in support of H.R. 36 and recognize the leadership of Representative Sharon Stewart Peregoy and the American Indian Caucus to end these brutal crimes. One of Montana Now's core issues is ending all forms of violence and discrimination against women and girls, especially missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and two-spirited people, as well as stand for Indigenous justice. HB 36 will continue to address the responses, especially by Indigenous families of the missing and murdered Indigenous people of Montana, and strengthen specific strategies by training for community-based response teams to accomplish this. We know that Montana has one of the highest rates of this gendered and racially biased crime and violations of human rights. MMIWG is an epidemic within a pandemic and requires our maximum attention and some funding because this issue impacts all Montanans, but especially the families of victims and survivors. They will be beneficiaries of this critically important legislation because they are the first responders in many cases of missing and murdered Indigenous persons. Therefore, HB 36 adds significant tools to jurisdictional law enforcement coordination, victim family support and education, and greater understanding needed by citizens of Montana to prevent and end these horrific-based crimes. While the two-year extension of the MMIP task force is crucially important to continue this work and make advancements toward prevention, given the pandemic and enormity of the MMIWG epidemics, we hope you will look ahead for a long-term commitment, and this funding will help do so, to the task force to stand in leadership and partnership for justice and the human rights of Indigenous peoples. In conclusion, Montana Now urges your steadfast investment by passing HB 36 and other relevant bills to address and advance personal and community safety amongst the most vulnerable of Montana citizens. Thank you for your time.
All right, seeing no further proponents, are there any opponents in the room? Seeing none and none online, do we have any informational witnesses?
Good morning, Chair Osmondson, members of the committee. My name is Dana Toole, D-A-N-A-T-O-O-L-E. I am the Special Services Bureau Chief at the Montana Department of Justice, and the Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force Program is supported in my bureau. I'm available for any questions from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Senator Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question, I think, perhaps for the sponsor, Representative Stewart Peregoy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Thank you very much. I'm a little fuzzy on this, but I recall that the federal government has a program similar to this, and I think that it's called Operation Lady Justice, and I'm wondering if this will tie together with that, or is it duplicative of that, or am I mistaken?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, there is the funding that's there, what we're looking at is collaboration, so it will not be duplication.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions from the committee? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the young lady from the DOJ.
Ms. Toole.
Chair Osmondson, Senator Lang.
Oh, I thought somebody was on there. Okay. Yeah. Excuse me, ma'am. Mr. Chairman, so will this money, if there's someone that's missing off the reservation, will this money be used to those people go off the reservation? Is there inner money in there for that, or will it be used that way?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, yes. The plan would be that this would train teams that both were on reservations, in proximity to reservations, and also in our non-tribal communities in Montana. So it would be available to many different communities who would like the training.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. The best way to sum it up, it's hard for me to talk about this because it's still fresh. As a tribal person, there's a lot of relationships, as Senator Agnew will understand, coming from my area. But what I want you to understand, so that responding to Senator Lang, this issue is not just indigenous. This issue is tied into the rise in meth trafficking that's going on and meth use within the state of Montana. It's tied, and it's also human trafficking is tied to that, and that it's a disproportionate number of Native women and men. But it sees no color, I do have to say that. I'm just going to say what it is. It's a scourge on Montana, and that it sees no color. It looks for the vulnerable. And there's a report, if you want to look into it further, we have a report from the that force trek to the legislature is called Looping in Native Communities. And the update was in May 2020, that even though in the midst of the pandemic, we still had people that were reported missing, and that it does not rest. And so as long as we have that scourge of meth, human trafficking across the state of Montana, young women, young men of all colors, all religions are at risk. And we do know that there's a lot of ties down to south and east and west. You would be surprised if you really dig into it, the extent of and connections that is going east and west, north and south across Montana. We're right in the middle. And so it's important to... I believe it's just a small amount of money, but our communities across Montana need to be prepared. And I believe that it's since we're looking at a training of trainers using best practices, it is efficient, and that we're investing in those communities. So I ask for due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 36. Go ahead and ask Senator Solomon to open on House Bill 252, since he is a co-sponsor.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair. Again, Senator Dan Solomon, last name S-A-L-O-M-O-N, representing Senate District 47. My pleasure today to bring you House Bill 252. This is a bill that is brought by the governor's office, and it is part of the Montana Comeback Plan that our governor has devised, and this was one of the key components. We've already had a hearing, I believe, in tax and on the floor, so we're just going to jump right to the fiscal note. House Bill 252 would create a tax credit for trades, education, and training. 50% of the training expense paid to an unrelated third party for training in a vocational, technical, or trades profession. The credits are capped annually at $2,000 per employee. And I want to emphasize, they have to be employees. This is not somebody you go find off the street and say, hey, do you want to go learn something? This has to be somebody you have employed. And it's $25,000 per year total for the employer or the company. The credit is available to offset a tax liability. Let's see, the $25,000 annual cap, maximum credit to be claimed for if you had 12 and a half employees, because you only get a 50%. In other words, you spend $4,000 training this person, you get a tax credit of $2,000. If you only spend $2,000 training that person, you get a tax credit of $1,000. The big number, $1 million. That's a projection. Again, we're talking tax credits, so it goes against revenue. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Their proponents, Senate Bill 252 on the fiscal note.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Adam Schaefer. It's S-C-H-A-F-E-R. I'm a deputy director at the Montana Department of Commerce. Montana Department of Commerce stands in support of House Bill 252, and this is first time in committee this session, so I'll make sure I stick to the fiscal note. As you heard, it creates a non-refundable tax credit for 50% of the qualified training expenses for vocational, technical, and trade professions. The Department of Commerce is investing in this tax credit by shifting $360,000 per fiscal year from the Primary Sector Workforce Training Grant Program that we administer to support the program. It's important to note that a major feature of the bill is that the employer and the employee are the decision makers for who and what is the most appropriate third-party training. This means that employers, and most beneficially as a result of the $25,000 maximum annual cap per company, which is in bullet number two on the fiscal note, the smaller employers in our states have the opportunity to benefit and grow and train their workforce. So the employee must first choose the training and then take it, and the employer pays for it. And after that is complete, the employer can take that tax credit. The state would incur minimal additional costs related to this bill. It's also anticipated that increases in revenue, productivity, and overall participation in tax-generating activities, as well as increased incomes, would result in improved tax volume collections as businesses grow. As I think you may know, that Montana is one of the lowest states achieving any gains from skilled trades training in the high school. Thus, the training and development of current employees and the ability to offer training to attract new employees is paramount to just maintain our current skilled trades workforce, not to mention growing it. The Department of Commerce urges the adoption of House Bill 252 to help our business attract top talent, train them to produce more products, and expand our business output to drive the Montana economy forward. For both businesses, both inside Montana as well as export. And as we look at the ARPA funds coming down and the investment we look to make in infrastructure, making sure that Montanans are skilled and the ones that are out there working on these projects will also be important. So this is part of the governor's Montana comeback plan, and we thank you for your time and urge due pass on House Bill 252.
Thank you. For the proponents.
Good morning, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Mark Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, here on behalf of Idaho Forest Group. We appreciated the efforts of being included in this bill. If you look at the amendments, we don't have anything to add to the fiscal implications. Appreciated. Yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents. We have a few online. It's Mary.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Aiden Myrie, representing the International Union of Painters and Trades. We too stand in support of House Bill 252. We believe that technical instruction in the classroom is a great way to develop workforce opportunities and strengthen the workforce. And we strongly support your passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. We have any other proponents online? I don't see any informational witnesses. None in the room. Heather, do we have any informational witnesses online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have two of them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Lee Bearlocker, B-A-E-R-L-O-C-H-E-R, Montana Department of Revenue. I'm available for questions, and I also have our Director of Tax Policy and Research with me as well, Ed Kaplis, C-A-P-L-I-S. We're both available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berlacher. All right, seeing no further informational witnesses, questions from the committee? That was quick. Would the sponsor like to close?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll be quick, too. This is, again, part of the comeback plan. It has excellent potential, especially with the new monies coming in. There will be plenty of work. Now we need the skilled workers to do it. This will give us an opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Solomon. This closes the hearing on House Bill 252. We will go ahead and open the hearing on House Bill, Senate Bill 383. Senator Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Senate District 5, Bob Keenan, K2E's, NAN. I offer to you Senate Bill 383. Back in 2017, we had a companion bill, House Bill 639, sponsored by Representative Cook, who was at that time the chairman of the B subcommittee. And there was Section 4 designated the funding stream from certain hospitals in Montana. And I can't tell you exactly where that money went. It went to the general fund, perhaps. But what happened in Section B this session, we have a problem that needs to be solved, and I think it's well understood from anybody that is aware of CSCT. That's Comprehensive School and Community Treatment. That is a mental health program for K through 12 that is contracted out by local school districts. I think there are 84 school districts across the state that use this program. It impacts 4,500 kids, 900 counselors, if you will, employees of these private contractors. It's a Medicaid program that deals with SED or severely emotionally disabled children. It has had nothing but rave reviews from the local districts across the state. What happened, what we learned in the B subcommittee, is that there was an issue about 4 years ago. And it is a Medicaid program again, so roughly it's a 65-35 match. And the Department of Public Health and Human Services was using a CPE, which is a certified public expenditure. What that means is that there was a soft match from the local school districts. A soft match means there's no cash involved. That money... What that soft match entails would be the use of the copy machines, the utilities, the lights, the room at the local schools, things like that. That was the 35% match. Somewhere along the line, Department of Public Health and Human Services messed that up. And CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, told Montana that they would no longer allow that CTE as the 35% match. The Department of Public Health and Human Services somehow shifted money around and covered that with general fund money. I don't know exactly how that all happens. There's a lot of money in the B subcommittee, and there's a lot of money in DPHHS, and especially in the caseload projections. So I digress off of the bill. That ultimately what I'm doing is presenting this bill, which in my research I asked, where did the money go in 17, and where did this concept come from? And as it turns out, it came from the Montana Hospital Association. There were negotiations going on back then about the HUF payment, which is the hospital utilization fee, and at some point, the Montana Hospital Association offered up this concept of money doesn't impact the critical access hospitals. And so I am suggesting, because Office of Public Instruction, Department of Public Health and Human Services, the Governor's Budget Office right now is trying to solve the problem of CSCT. We want that program to continue. It more than likely will not continue as of July 1st. We're trying, those that are at the table right now are trying to decide if if this certified public expenditure concept is appropriate and will be approved by CMS, or if they could use an IGT, which is the intergovernmental transfer, which we use for nursing homes and hospitals and all of that, and that's basically just providing money, matching it, and then the money comes back. It's a bit of a scheme. I don't think there's any other way of describing it. I'm not comfortable with either the CPE or the IGT. So I'm offering up this bill, fully understanding that this bill will be in the hands of this committee and ultimately the legislature, and what this committee and along the steps along the way decide to do with this is totally up to you. There's another issue that's out there that we're hearing a lot about, and that's insurance coverage for hearing impaired children to buy that equipment. It's an insurance squabble. I'm looking at this sort of funding might be able to patch that hole. Over 3 years, it'd be some $13 million that might be put aside to cover those kinds of expenses. In other words, I'm just leaving it up to the legislature, the committee, the leadership of this committee, the Appropriations Committee, the Governor's Budget Office, and all of that to decide what you want to do. I provided you with a folder with lots of information, especially important if you want to understand this issue and why I'm doing what I'm doing with this bill. I'll have it be known, maybe it's no secret, I'm not a fan of companion bills. I'm old school when it comes to putting together House Bill 2 and putting the pieces together at the last minute. That's why I brought this as a Senate bill, so that we're upfront and honest and here's a bill, here's a source of funding. The original concept came from the Montana Hospital Association. I suspect that they'll all be opponents today, but that's fine. But that first article that I have, Friends with Tax Benefits, I would beg of you to read that. It is absolutely fascinating, and it talks, the terminology is the same. This bill has to do with a community benefits assessment. And that's exactly what we're talking about, is a community benefit. That article is tremendous. So, and it also, in that article, it points out that there are a couple of requirements for nonprofit hospitals. One is an annual report to the IRS that outlines the community. It's called a community benefits report. So they are required to do that every year for the IRS. What are they doing to justify their nonprofit status in the community? And I'm here to tell you that CSET is probably a whole lot better than buying a box of donuts for the local Rotary Club soccer tournament or whatever. Community health needs assessment report is a three-year required document. It's on the implementation plan. That is required by ACA for the last few years. So there are those reports. And back when we were discussing Medicaid expansion a couple years ago, I did more research than I should have done, perhaps. But I looked at 990 forms from hospitals, nonprofits, and all of that. And I read every word in all of these. Some are nonprofits, all the different corporations and entities that are underneath the umbrella of any given hospital in Montana. So I also put some other information in there that is appropriate from the legislative auditor, and you can see those charts tell you various things. I won't belabor the point. I just hope that you understand that I think this is a needed a needed bill. Office of Public Instruction is very concerned about the CSCT program, specifically what this committee or the legislature does should this bill make its way through the process will be determined, but we at least need bridge funding as of July 1st to take care of CSCT until the powers that be figure out whether we're going to do an IGT or a CPE. I think that's it. I'll try to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Are there proponents? Senate Bill 383. Seeing none in the room, I do have one listed online. Is that correct?
That is correct. This is Aiden Myrie representing Kalispell Regional Healthcare, and we do stand in opposition to Senate Bill 383. Hospitals, including their employees, our patients, and their families, couldn't be at a more fragile time right now, and we feel that this added cost and tax is really just a tax on the sick and those who are most compromised. So we would encourage a do not pass on Senate Bill 383. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. We will have you as I have a down as a proponent, but we will put you down as an opponent. So.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Glad you called for opponents.
Senator Keenan said he'll take it as a proponent. All right. Seeing no further proponents, and now that we've gotten the opponents online out of the way, do we have opponents in the room?
Chairman Osmundson, members of the committee, for the record, Duane Pressinger, spelled D-U-A-N-E-P-R-E-S-H-I-N-G-E-R, with the Montana Hospital Association. The Montana Hospital Association represents 87 hospitals, nursing homes, and assisted living facilities around the state of Montana, and we respectfully oppose Senate Bill 383, which seeks to implement a sick tax on hospital patients of over $4.3 million annually and over the 3 years, a total of $13 million, and put the money into general fund. Throughout the previous work of the legislature and member and Montana's leaders, including many of you on this committee, hospitals have been able to successfully navigate the challenges brought on by COVID. We would like to thank our elected leaders who have helped keep our rural hospitals open, ensure that healthcare services were available throughout the pandemic. All this work helped to stabilize our healthcare system during a time of great uncertainty. Montana is one of the few states throughout the country which has not had a hospital close in over a generation. During COVID, community hospitals were hard hit. In a recent study, community hospital revenues through October of 2021 show a 6% decline from 2019 to 2020. This reduction was before COVID surge occurred in late 2020. Montana hospitals, even with federal relief funds, posted a $60 million loss in revenue for the first three quarters of 2020. Any additional reduction threatens the viability of the hospitals that you, as elected leaders, have worked so hard to stabilize. A strong hospital system is an essential foundation for all of our communities. In addition, the legislature is currently working to authorize over $3 billion in federal COVID relief funds. In spite of these relief funds, Senate Bill 383 levies a new tax on Montana hospitals. The tax jeopardizes the ability of our hospitals to meet the ongoing physical and emotional needs of our local communities, and we urge lawmakers to vote no. And in regards to some of the questions, Director Meyer from the Department of Public Health has testified that they're working closely with OPI to address the CSCT issues moving forward. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Pressinger. Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Frank Cote, C-O-T-E. I'm representing the Sisters Charity of Leavenworth and Providence Hospitals of Montana. Those two organizations comprise the five Catholic hospitals in Montana, and we strongly oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bill Warden here on behalf of Bozeman Health and St. Peter's Health. You know, my grandpa used to say, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. This is a tax. There's no way about it. This is a tax, and I think the message that this legislature would send to the healthcare community while you're trying to figure out how to spend $3 billion to increase the cost of healthcare like this is a bad message, and I would ask and encourage you not to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warden.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amy Grimalis. The last name is G-R-M-O-L-J-E-Z, and I represent the Billings Clinic. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you should have received an electronic handout for us, and I'll make sure that you have it, so I won't read that into the record. But on behalf of Billings Clinic, we would echo a number of the sentiments that have been expressed prior opponents, and just advise that since 1994, we've been working with Riverstone Health and St. Vincent's to help collaborate to create and sustain a number of innovative initiatives and create this complex community-wide health work together. We think that this type of bill is a tax, and we also think that it would then take away from those community benefit programs that we put those dollars towards. Happy to go through any of the points of that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents? Seeing none, do we have any informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Senator Howard.
Yes, for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howard.
I'm going by memory here, but last session, didn't the bed tax net the hospitals like $300 million?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howard, I don't have that number on the top of my head here.
Okay. One other question. Didn't we actually, last session, didn't we have meetings where we were aghast at the raise of executive pay, millions of dollars all over the state of Montana? Didn't Senator Brown run those?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howard, yes, there was a select committee appointed by leadership in the Senate, and they did have hearings, and that was led by Senator Brown. Some of the legislative audit information that's in that folder that I passed out includes some of her inquiries into that, into the numbers as well.
One other, Chairman, a question is, over the years, we've seen hospitals expand, and build, and actually they built hospitals up in my district in Red Lodge and Columbus, and they're spending money like it's going out of style. I just understand how does this in any way put the hospitals in any kind of a poverty state?
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Howard. I think I don't see this as a tremendous burden. And again, given the fact that there are those two reports that are required for community benefits to enable them to keep their nonprofit status, I don't think that this is a tremendous burden given the volume that we have in the hospitals. Another area of concern for me is provider rates and mental health in local communities, and I have seen over 20 years that we've gotten away from the institutional settings or having mental health crises turn into emergency room visits or jail incarceration. And what's happening in the local communities now is I see a shift more towards, with Medicaid expansion and the expansion of fees, that hospital emergency rooms are now playing more of a role in mental health crises situations for a landing point. And hospitals, from what I understand, they are hiring psych techs and psychologists and all of that. And private providers cannot afford to pay the kind of wages that they're competing against with the hospitals who do have that higher wage. It's off subject a little bit, but thank you.
Senator Solomon.
Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor, I guess.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, is there a correlation? You wanted to use some of this for the CSCT issue. Is there a correlation or a relationship there somehow? That,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Salomon, I believe that there is, just in the fact that the hospitals are held to that community benefit to maintain their nonprofit status. There is another connection specifically. The Kalispell Regional Hospital, which is now called Logan Care because they've expanded across the Continental Divide through Logan Pass, they run a CSCT program in a school district in the Flathead. So it's been interesting that CSCT program is threatened right now, and yet the hospital in Kalispell runs a CSCT program, and I've gotten a tremendous amount of interest about maintaining the CSCT program somehow. So there is a link that, in this particular case, there's a hospital that would be taxed. Call it what you want. I'm not afraid of that word when we're talking about trying to provide mental health services in K through 12. That doesn't scare me at all. But there is that direct connection between a hospital that offers the CSCT program.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have another one.
Follow up.
Pressinger?
Pressinger, yes.
Pressinger, excuse me.
Chair Hosman-Sin, Senator Solomon.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pressinger, you mentioned that hospitals were having a tough time through the COVID thing. Well, we're getting through that. Are hospitals going back to what I would consider pre-COVID to where you are now, let's call it your profit centers, your surgery units where you do elective surgeries and things that people can now come and do? And let's just say your hospital is set up to do those things, and that's how you make profit. So is your profitability coming back now that all these services can be utilized by patients?
Chair Osmondson, Senator Solomon, hospitals have opened up their elective surgeries. They did shut down for the first three or four months of the pandemic, due to many issues in regards to PPE and things like that. They have opened up. There is still patients aren't as quick coming back because they're still concerned with COVID, but they are opening up their elective surgeries. And I would say even the best of times, a hospital margin is 3%. So even the best of times without COVID, it's 3%. And so just to get to an earlier statement is, there was a community benefit assessment put in place in 2017. I wasn't in my role, so I can't speak to the, it was under a previous administration. But in 2019, hospitals did stand up and help fund Medicaid expansion through a part of their tax, on the hospitals. And so they do fund, that they generate $20 million in state special revenue that is then matched at a 90-10 match for $200 million in to help fund the Medicaid program. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Keenan, two quick questions. The proceeds from this assessment go into the general fund. And I just want you to talk to me a little bit about why that you didn't set up an account that it went into or something, because if it goes into the general fund, I assume you know it doesn't necessarily go to Section B.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis, thank you for that question. What I anticipate is a language amendment in House Bill 2 that should Senate Bill 383 pass, that it will, this is my vision, is that it would be appropriated for the specific purpose of CSCT or whatever the process does decide. But I do recognize that I don't have it earmarked at this point in time.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Keenan, talk to me a little bit about the amounts that are charged for these hospitals. Are they updated numbers from 2017? Just what to the 2017 legislation? ask for. I just need a, I don't know why these numbers are in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis, thank you very much. I do not have an answer for that. I do not know what the formula was that decided what those numbers would be. That's when I did that research with the Office of Budget and Program Planning, second floor, Governor's Budget Office. That's when I found out that this proposal in 17 was put forth by the Hospital Association. I don't know, Mr. Bob Olson did this. He's retired. He's gone. So I don't know what the genesis of this all is. I will take a minute that I have an amendment. It's in the system. It's not here, obviously, yet. But on page 1, line 21, the Bozeman Health Big Sky Medical Center is now a critical access hospital, so it does not fall in here. So the fiscal note would be adjusted down $2,900. There is a rehabilitation hospital in Bozeman. I think that's part of the St. V's out of Billings hospital. So I didn't put that in this bill. I fully anticipate that there will be discussion about these numbers. I can't tell you where they came from, what kind of a formula that the MHA had at that time, but of course the bill can be amended and those numbers could be doubled perhaps.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Keenan.
Senator McNally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Senator Keenan.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and Senator, as you know, we both were on Section B subcommittee. And without focusing on the hospitals per se, there is, we do need bridge funding for the CSCT program. And I don't understand why we are not using any of the rescue funds that are one time only. This would be the perfect application for those funds while we figure out a longer term solution. So I guess instead of looking at a new tax, I guess I would like to hear your response to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator McNally, that's a good question. It was mentioned by one of the opponents that could be a source of funding. I think the challenge that we have, and the chairman here is intimately involved in all of that, will it fit within the requirements or the lack or flexibility of that, what's it called, ARPA, I think, those funds. But you're absolutely right. Perhaps this could be, and I think the argument could be made that the CSET program would fit into that because these programs at the local level in those 84 school districts were disrupted by the close of school last spring. So I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that that would be appropriate funding to get those programs up. Well, they're running now, I gather, in most of those districts. But I think that that could be an appropriate source of funds.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Guff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor.
Thank you.
Senator Keenan, yeah, I had some of it. Mr. Chairman, you just answered one of my questions was, how did we come at these numbers? And you said you didn't know. Evidently, somebody else came up with them.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's correct.
From, was it something in 2017 or 19 that?
Mr. Chairman, yes. It was House Bill 639, which is a companion bill that came out of the B subcommittee and sponsored by Representative Cook. And so at the latter stages, obviously, of the 2017 session, and the bill covered a 3-year it was a 3-year period that this money came in, equal amounts every year due to the state, I believe it was by June 29th of each year,
for 3 years. So we've had a year that this has not been in place, and this bill proposes that it be for June 29th. There it is, line 12, page 1, for the next 3 years. House Bill 639 started it 3 months later at the end of June, and this would do the same. I just took what was in Senate House Bill 639 and plugged it into this bill and knew that I'd hand it to the committee, and the committee can do with it as it sees fit, table it or amend it, whatever you want to do.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So the destination of the money right now is general fund, but I believe you mentioned there would be an amendment coming that might specify a more particular use, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cuff, that is correct, that we could put a language amendment in House Bill 2, that the language is usually should Senate Bill 383 pass, that amount of money would go somewhere other than the general fund.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Okay, going back a few years when it was collected before, did it have a particular destination at that time, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cuff, I can't find that information. I'm not sure. I talked to Mr. Evans down on the second floor in the governor's budget office, and I didn't get an answer from him either. I'm sure it can be researched and find out specifically what was that about. It came about during some negotiations about the HUF payments at the time, and Mr. Pressinger's predecessor in the job offered this up, and here we are. Looks like a pretty good scheme.
Thank you, Senator Cumian. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Pressinger, please.
Chair Osmundson, Senator Lang.
Mr. Pressinger, to follow up along, I think, Senator Solomon's line, let's just hypothetically, or if you know the numbers, not hypothetically, but let's say 19, 20, and 21, how much did your hospitals give to charity in those years, do you know?
Chair Osmundson, Senator Lang, that's not information I have available. I'm happy to provide you the information from the community reports that are required.
Okay. Just to follow up, just for information, since my being in the legislature, there's been some time when hospital association members called me and said they gave $125 million per that year to charity. But answer me this. It was mentioned in testimony that this is a tax. How can we have a tax on a nonprofit tax corporation?
Chair Osmundson, Senator Lang, I guess from my perspective only is right is if you're requesting money, to me it's a tax. It's called I would call it a tax. From the legal argument, I don't know that.
Thank you.
Senator Solomon.
Mr. Chairman, I'm curious, there might be some legal expert or have some institutional knowledge, as called, on some of this history that I was thinking Ms. Grimalwitz might have an opportunity to maybe enlighten us a little bit, because she's been involved in this for a long time.
Certainly. Do you have a specific question, Senator Solomon, or just overall give us the history of 639?
That's it. That would be the question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Solomon, thank you for the question. One of the benefits and the detriments to me being up here for so long is that I have my own perspective of the historical knowledge of this kind of history of what transpired. And so I guess I would have to take you back to several sessions ago when we were debating whether or not to fund Medicaid expansion, and this body voted to do so. At the time, there was also another dialogue occurring within these walls about funding a program for pre-K under Governor Bullock. It was one of his priorities. And so, as happens up here, there was a discussion amongst people higher up the food chain than myself about how to fund that. And there wasn't $3 billion sitting there that you could use as one-time money. And so the funding source came to be the hospitals, the PPS hospitals to be particular. And a number of us were in the halls who work for those entities, including myself, and so I do have some firsthand knowledge about it. And we were corralled into a room and advised that this was what was going to happen. And so how much were we willing to pay? And that is how you got to that number, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So I did not want to leave the record unclear that this was a voluntary idea that the hospitals came up with. And you can debate all day long what something is, a tax or a fee. We have that conversation many times up here when we're trying to decide if we want to pass something or not. But the nonprofit status of these entities does not allow for you to call it a tax. And so it was called a fee. And that is a short version, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I hope it's helpful for the record. And if I'm to be clear, if there were others that have ideas about that, I'm sure you may hear from them as well. But that is, again, a short version. And some of your colleagues who are still sitting in these chairs were in that room. I don't see any of them here today. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Further questions? Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Pressinger, please.
Chair Osmundson, Senator Glimm.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pressinger, I don't expect that you have this off the top of your head, but could you get us what the HUF payment is to each one of these hospitals that's listed in here?
Yes.
Get a dollar amount for that?
Chair Osmundson, Senator Glimm, yes, I can.
Follow up?
Good.
And then could you just give us a... maybe your synopsis of how the HUF payment works.
Chair Osmundson, Senator Glimm. So the HUF payment is a there's a daily fee for people that are in inpatient hospital. That fee is now set at $70. It's been anywhere from I think 30 up now to 70, and that fee is paid by the hospitals at the end of, and it's paid by all hospitals, PPS and critical access hospitals. It's paid into the Department of Public Health and Human Services. It's paid into the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Public Health and Human Services uses those funds to draw down federal funds as the match, and then those payments are then paid out based on the number of Medicaid bed days each of the facilities had over the previous year, and that formula then pays out to each of the different hospitals based on that number of Medicaid bed days over the previous year. And also to add in, hospitals under law can't be paid more than the federal upper limit, and so it's not like it's an endless reimbursement methodology. Medicare sets what hospitals can be reimbursed at the max, and once that max is hit, they're not reimbursed any longer. So they're not paid above Medicare allowable charges.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Prescott, just so I get that right, that payment that's made to Department of Revenue, you said is used to bring down federal money. So my understanding of that is that's split into traditional Medicaid and then Medicaid expansion. Then that dollar amount is matched by the either 2-to-1 or 9-to-1 match. And so it comes in back to the hospitals at, the $70 under traditional Medicaid would turn into $210 back to the hospital. And the $70 under Medicaid expansion would be $630. Is that correct?
Chair Osmundson, Senator Glimm, that's correct. It's based on the number of Medicaid bed days in each of the different populations, whether they're traditional Medicaid or their Medicaid expansion. And then based on those, then it's matched to the appropriate rate and paid back out of the hospitals using those match rates and that process. Clear as mud.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, that just, to me, this is the biggest Ponzi scheme going, so thank you.
Further questions from the committee? All right, seeing none, Senator Keenan, would you like to close?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. You have Senate Bill 383, and do with it what you decide is best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on Senate Bill 383. All right, members, I've got just a few executive action I'd like to take care of. They're on the board behind me, but I will read them off for those that can't see them. It's House Bill 55, House Bill 66, and then House Bill 129. Give you a minute if you want to get those pulled out. That's 55, 66, and 129, and they're all House bills. Senator Cuff, do you want to maybe move? We'll just start with House Bill 55. This is the revising lighting requirements for snow removal equipment.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 55.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Again, this is to revise requirements for snow removal equipment, the light requirements, excuse me. Any discussion?
I'd like to just say something.
Senator Howard.
Before we call a question, Department of Transportation has the ability to do this. They have the money to do it. I think this is kind of worthless myself. I'm going to vote no. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, let's do a voice vote, knowing there will be a little no vote. So all those in favor would say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. No. Senator Howard's no.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers and Senator Boldman vote aye by proxy.
Senator Welburn votes aye by proxy.
Vote Senator Smith. Senator Smith votes aye by proxy. All right. Motion carries. Move on to 66.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 66.
Short title is to reauthorize securities restitution fund by Representative Moore. Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if you would indulge me to do a conceptual amendment.
Ooh, we can pause if we need to get a real amount. How conceptual are we talking?
So this fund has a balance of $1 million in it, and so the 4.5% is actually overfunding that. And so the suggestion was made to me to drop it to 3%, and that would keep it just a little bit more even in, even out kind of thing, They would still probably sit with $1 million balance as they go forward, but it would not add to it.
Senator Glimm, did you talk to the sponsor? Was that
in concurrence
with the sponsor? Okay.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm going to turn to you. What are your thoughts on conceptual amendment?
Mr. Chairman, we can do that one.
Okay. So, Senator Glimm, why don't you restate it in the form of a motion?
I would go ahead and move that we amend House Bill 66 conceptually by changing the percentage from 4.5% to 3%. Mr. Chairman.
Is there a discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, let's try a voice vote. Those in favor of the motion would say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers and Senator Goldman vote aye by proxy.
Senator Smith and Senator Wellborn vote aye by proxy. All right. Senator Cuff, go ahead and move that as amended, House Bill 66.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 66 as amended. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, is there discussion on the motion? Those in favor of the motion would say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Senator Smith, Senator Wellborn, or aye by proxy.
And Senator Goldman and Senator Flowers are aye by proxy.
Right, motion carries. We're on to House Bill 129.
Mr. Chairman, I would move a due pass on House Bill 129, and that has to do with the Qualified Education Savings Program, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Is there discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing no discussion, let's do a roll call vote. Prudence.
Vice Chair Cuff?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ellis?
No.
Senator Ankeny?
Yes.
Senator Bogner?
Yes.
Senator Glimm?
Yes.
Senator Howard?
Yes.
Senator Kerry?
Yes.
Senator Keenan?
No.
Senator Lang?
Yes.
Senator Salomon?
Yes.
Senator Smith?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Wellborn?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Goldman?
No, by proxy.
Senator Flowers?
No, by proxy.
Senator Jacobson?
No.
Senator Morjo?
No.
Senator McNally?
No.
Senator Lynch?
No.
Chair Osmundson?
Yes.
Eleven yes and eight no. Motion carries.
All right. Motion carries. Senator Solomon, would you mind carrying that one on the floor? He would love to. Great. Who would like to carry? I'm sorry? I don't know who carried that on the floor from tax. You're right. It does go to third unamended. Sorry. It'll go to third. Never mind. Unamended. We will need somebody to carry House Bill 66 since we did amend that. Senator Glimm, since you amended it.
Who's got
I suppose. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Who's got the snow plow?
That one goes straight to third as well. So House Bill 55, since it's unamended, we've already heard it, so it would go straight to third. I know, Dwayne, but we could maybe put on second if you'd like to carry it. Senator Ingram.
We can pull two lights back in if you want. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, members. So tomorrow we have, for your information, House Bill 266, Senate Bill 143, Senate Bill 232, and Senate Bill 285. That is what we'll be hearing. Chris, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's House Bill 260.
I'm sorry, did I say Senate Bill? Yes, House
you
Bill 260.
266.
I'm sorry, House Bill 260. Senate Bill 143, Senate Bill 232, and Senate Bill 285. And I guess, Chris, is it? You said it was posted for 8 o'clock. Do you mind if we move it to 9? Does that matter? Does anybody care?
Prudence can send out new notices. Nine. We will change it to 9.
We'll do 9. Chairman. All right. If there's nothing else to come before the committee...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ellis has her hand.
I'm sorry. Senator Ellis.
Can you tell us what executive action will likely happen tomorrow?
Senator Ellis, I haven't even given it a thought, to be very honest with you. So
okay.
I can, if we, I'll get with Chris and we'll decide if we're going to do any, and I will send out an email. How's that?
Perfect. Thank you.
You bet. All right. If there's nothing else, we are adjourned.